camel hijinks, indiscriminate firing of Soviet machine guns, someone on the soundtrack who either sounds like or is Ladysmith Black Mambazo, then mostly some classic rock singles, playing soccer near a chicken, crowds of shouting children, drinking hard liquor while sweaty, sand. These add up to one thing, an adventure movie about white people in Africa. Specifically Sahara, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, I'm Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm joined here by two people who are in the Foot Clan, but they're not all that committed. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Here's some cigarettes.
And Camila Adams.
What's high score mean?
Yeah, turtle power. I'm awash in the podcast right now because I just posted the Turtles episode, so we do not have much time to have received reaction to it. I can tell you that it landed in 70th place overall for us with a score of 46. That is just below Solo, A Star Wars Story, and just above our new friend With Honors. Better movie than With Honors. That is also much better than the other Turtles that we did, the animated one from 2007. That is in 82nd on our list, thanks to the 11 points out of 100 that Camila gave that one. 35 and a third was the overall for that one. The most notable thing, listening back to last week's episode, was the moment where Camila said, "I couldn't handle the cute old man dying. I'm still not over Up." What? Eerily predicting the passing of Ed Asner this weekend. Great job. Great job.
I know.
I was literally editing the episode when I was like taking a break while it saved and went on Twitter and thought he died.
Yeah, that's a real kick. That makes me feel like a real heel. But, you know, yes, R.I.P. Ed. Aww.
Yeah, he lived a wonderful
life. He did.
That's the thing.
He had a great full career, a full life, and then I guess in his later years, I guess he went on more so to doing voiceover work, I guess, is what he was mostly doing. But he was also, I'm pretty sure, if memory serves me, he was playing Johnny's dad on the Cobra Kai series. Or,
what? That's awesome!
Yeah, but he was only in like maybe one or two episodes, but I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly.
And Elf, a movie I've seen now. I finally watched Elf last December, and he's charming in it. I always feel bad, but this is one of those where I see the news alert and I'm like, oh, he was still alive.
Yeah.
He's not now, but he was until a couple minutes ago. Yeah, I truly did not think he was alive.
I don't know why I feel so bad when that happens to me. Like, when I'm like, oh, I thought they were dead already.
A long-term, I wouldn't necessarily call him an internet friend, but source of other internet friends, Adam Bonin, I think I'm correctly ascribing this, coined that as pre-morse. Preemptive remorse.
But then it wasn't like I grieved him though. Like when I thought that he was already
right. It's not like you're like, oh, I should have been calling him.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
No, he didn't care.
Right. Oh, had I known he was still alive, we could have hung out more. Like, no.
Death and turtles aside, Robin, why are we here? What's happening?
All right. So I won my second Solo bingo of the calendar year, and I got to pick a movie out of our roughly 1,200 number one movies in America. And of all of those, I picked completely forgotten, in fact, box office bomb, which I think Sean will probably cover in the Faxi segment.
Oh, yeah.
Sahara. And I want to thank Sean for not putting me directly on blast in that opening regarding white people in Africa, of whom I used to be one.
I I was trying to work out parodying the Bo Burnham white woman's Instagram to the white people in Africa movie, but I couldn't quite get it to scan. Also, Robin hates that song, and that would have felt disrespectful on her select.
Well, I mean, this whole episode is going to be about disrespecting me, which is valid. I have invited this hour-long shaming, so let's get to it.
You know, it's funny when you, Sean, when you were describing the movie of, like, you know, camel hijinks and soccer with near chickens and then, like, greasy, sweaty beer drinking. It was like, it all adds up to Matthew McConaughey. Like, basically, that's like, those are all things that I would imagine would be on Matthew McConaughey's dating profile. Like, that's, all right, what I like to do.
You feel like if you went into any unmarked, vaguely dusty bar that is not in our specific quarter of the world, that is either anywhere in the southern or eastern hemispheres, he would be there. He'd be there sitting.
Totes. He'd be in the corner booth, probably. He'd definitely be sweaty. Absolutely. No matter.
He's never not.
No matter what time of year.
He was on that ice planet in Interstellar just sweating.
And is this our first visit with Matthew McConaughey on the podcast?
I think it might be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Where does everybody stand on him?
He's never a reason for me. I know, right? It's like, he's never a reason why I see a movie. But, okay. And he's also never, it's never like, oh, cool, Matt's here. But it's just like, I'm just kind of indifferent, I guess. I don't know. There was a point in time where I kind of found him charming and sexy. But that quickly left, like that quickly faded, like for some reason or other. I don't know. I just don't really think about him too much other than his wife's name is Camila. And I always get a chuckle out of that. He says my name.
Nice.
I like him okay post-McConaissance. I did not like him in this mode. I didn't like him as like a, you know, a hunky rom-com or adventure movie star. I just thought it didn't seem like him, and it's kind of not. He's right. Kind of a weirdo. So I think it works better in, I think he's great in Mud. I think his best thing is the first season of True Detective.
Yeah.
You know, I am usually fine with him being there now, but I certainly don't need him around.
Right. One of my favorite roles of his, I think, was with The Wedding Planner with J-Lo.
that's a rough one. My, like, film criticism career began with when I was getting married. I had a blog about getting married, and I reviewed movies with weddings in them, and I remember reviewing that one and being like, ugh. But that's in the context of watching a different wedding movie every week.
That's got to be a lot. That's hard to digest.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
They are all the same.
He's certainly at peak abdominal in this movie. It's very, very fit.
Yeah. It was a moment when they first panned to him on his boat or whatever, sunning himself. And I'm like, well, hello. Hello, McConaissance.
There was a nice moment. It's him and Penelope Cruz in a Jeep. And I just turned to Colin and I went, two Oscar winners.
It's hard to believe.
Does Dallas Buyers Club still exist in this world? Like, if you tried to stream it right now, would it just go, no, it's gone now?
Fully erased. Which is too bad. Yeah. Like, Jared Leto aside. That's actually a pretty good movie.
Not too terrible. I've also found this movie kind of ironic because with starring both Penelope Cruz and Matthew McConaughey, like, I can barely understand what either one of them are talking about under, like, for different reasons. Like, Penelope's accent is extremely thick, and Matthew is just like, even he's got sentences in front of him to read, I'm sure, but I'm just like, what are you getting at?
Was he literally sipping tequila out of shot glasses during all of filming?
I'm sure he was.
Do we have another one of those calls to William H. Macy so that someone can come in and remind us what the plot is in a very direct tone?
Yes.
That'd be good. Yeah, let's do the stuff and then react more. It's Camila's turn for a 60-second recap. I'm sure with much more preparation than I brought last week. So here, to tell you what happens in Sahara, it's Camila Adams, Ray, and go.
In 1865, a dude on a Civil War ship gets some gold to hide, and the ship disappears. Present day, Eva is a doctor trying to help the people of Lagos find a disease. She goes looking for a child's father, finds a dead body, and is attacked. Dirk, a naval historian, rescues her. She wakes up on his ship just as his team recovers something, and now they all go off to a museum party. Dirk finds gold coin that he's super jazzed about. Could be a clue about the Civil War ship. Eva and her partner have a disease to cure, so they catch a ride with Dirk and them to Niger. There's a suit and a General Kazim who mean to stop Eva from finding the source of the disease. They go to attack the boat, but Eva has already been dropped off, and Dirk and them survive. Lots of attacks, explosions, camel rides, and train hopping. They find a toxic waste plant, which is polluting the water, and it also turns out the Civil War ship is buried in the desert, and that's also polluting the water and poisoning the people. They find the ship, they shut down the toxic waste plant, and Dirk and Eva live happily ever after.
Great. 58 seconds. Yeah, by the way, I did take 2 points away for the name Dirk Pitt.
I mean,
get out.
But seriously, though, if you were to look at Matthew McConaughey, you're like, yeah, that dude's name is Dirk. It's not Matthew. He's like, more of a Dirk Cutler, than has ever
you
dirked.
You wrote 25 books about a guy and named him Dirk Pitt.
Do you have facts about the airport novels upon which this is based? Because
a little bit.
I'm curious.
That is a thing that I have always wanted to know more about as much as I watch this movie and have never really delved into. I famously don't read, and so I've never read any of these books. I did try watching the previous Dirk Pitt movie, Raise the Titanic, when it was on HBO Max, and immediately fell asleep, like before the credits were over.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into it, and with that lead-in, let's just get into it right now. Sahara was released April 8th, 2005, the 13th number one movie of that year, winning that weekend with $18 million. Second place was the second weekend of Sin City. The only competition was the truly awful baseball rom-com Fever Pitch. Whoa. With Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore, the couple we've all been waiting to see. debuted in third with $12.4 million.
One where they genuinely filmed the shot at the Red Sox winning the World Series.
Sure. Which is a little like, get the fuck out of here. Shit, real things are happening. You don't need to make a little romantic comedy in this moment.
I've never seen that movie, but I remember that being very cool to me. Also, the Red Sox winning the World Series in 2004 and the Cubs winning the World Series in 2016. Watch out for the third time that happens.
I don't know what any of this means.
What?
It's George W. Bush winning re-election and Trump winning his election right after a completely unthinkable team winning a World Series.
Who's left? I mean, the Pirates, I guess.
Yes, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, now we have that to worry about.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's fine. Everything's fine. The world we live in is fine. Sahara fell to second in its second week. Behind the remake of the Amityville Horror, at $23.5 million, Sahara fell to $13 million, spent 5 weeks in the top 10, for a total of $68.6 million, the 35th highest grossing film of that year. That's not so bad, right? Well, you see, the budget was greenlit at $80 million. It ended up ballooning to $160 million. Production costs just spiraled out of control, some of which was bribes to the Moroccan government. and a lot of bloated salaries. The interesting thing, you could look up some of this, because as part of a later lawsuit, the full line-by-line budget for this movie leaked and revealed exactly how much money they wasted, including spending $2 million on a shot of a plane crash that was later cut from the film.
Oh, my God.
Was it the plane that they turn into a
parasail?
Yeah.
Yes. That's the only plane I remember.
I mean,
so
they have the pointless flashback to the Confederate
right.
ship.
Right. So unnecessary.
That is just truly, like, I remember watching that and being like, this could have paid for at least 10 people's college education.
Right. For what was it, like 7 minutes?
Not even. And just also just like a bad introduction of the film. And I will say that when I first saw this movie, we walked in late. We walked in during the credit sequence,
which is a great sequence. Shout out
Thank
to the art
you.
Department.
Yes.
for that.
In my ongoing defense of me liking this horrible movie.
Apparently that's a Clive Cussler thing. We'll get to it. But apparently okay. in his books, there's always one chapter that is fully in the past. And so that's him saying, oh, okay. keep that thing.
All right.
Yeah. So $160 million is the eventual budget. It is estimated that, all told, Sahara lost somewhere between $75 and $105 million. As a result, it has been ranked as one of the biggest flops of all time. There's no good way to actually figure out that number. The biggest flop of all time is either John Carter or The Lone Ranger, but Sahara is on the list somewhere. We keep mentioning Clive Cussler. He is a very successful paperback writer. He has written more than 80 books. At least 20 have been on the New York Times bestseller list. He is also an accomplished underwater explorer. That's not fake. When he's not writing a book, he's driving.
Him and James Cameron.
Yep. Like, I was on his Wikipedia, and, like, you know the bottom of a Wikipedia page where there'll be, like, the little index of everything related to a guy?
Yeah.
Then there was this, it also doubled to the underwater exploration index.
Oh, jeez.
Which, in, like, notable 20th century, he's just one of them. You know, he's got two jobs. Good for him.
Was one of them James Cameron?
No, and James Cameron wasn't there. So
which
he's
I
more
think is an oversight.
Probably. But still, in the Wikipedia eyes, Clive Cussler is more legit than James Cameron. So there you go. As Robin mentioned, this is only the second of his books to be adapted into a film. The first was Raise the Titanic in 1980 with Jason Robards and Alec Guinness. That was also a notorious bomb. They earned $7 million against a $40 million budget. One critic said it would have been cheaper to actually raise the Titanic. Clive Cussler was disgusted with that adaptation, hated it. He refused any additional requests until Sahara. And then was disgusted with Sahara, then launching an 8-year legal battle where Cussler and the studios sued each other back and forth over whose fault it was that it bombed and who owed who money as a result, which after 8 years, everything was thrown out. So no one got anything. They just yelled at each other in court for 8 years.
Didn't he die?
Egos.
No, I think he's fine.
What? Oh, I definitely thought that Clive Cussler died.
Why were there 5 screenwriters?
Why do you think?
Because Clive Cussler kept firing them. They said that they kept, like, he wrote the first draft itself. It didn't work because he's not a screenwriter. So they kept sending people over to punch it up. And he kept saying, that guy's a hack. He's fired. And this went on and on and on.
He died in February 2020. So good for him.
Okay.
Right. Just before the world broke.
Hey, getting out while the getting was good.
Right.
Kenny Rogers, who knew when to fold them. Also in that full budget that leaked, most people made about what you would expect. Matthew McConaughey made, I think, $8 million. Steve Zahn was 3.5. Penelope Cruz was somewhere in the middle of the two.
Steve Zahn makes millions of dollars per picture?
I mean, at that time.
Good for him. I have no idea.
On the other hand, Rainn Wilson received $45,000 for this movie. What? What?
Do you think that's low or high? I'm confused.
I think it's kind of low in comparison to everybody else.
You think that's low?
He had a significant part in a $160 million movie, and right. you paid him, you know, what a relatively new mechanic makes in a year.
I mean, this is the year that The Office
started.
Is it? Right? Or at least started to be watched, let's put it that way. And, you know, that's more than a lot of people, including me, make in a year.
Yeah, I suppose. I just, justice for people who are in a movie a lot but aren't famous.
Fair enough.
Pay them too if you have that much money to throw around. But
fair
yeah,
enough.
Right.
He was not famous yet, certainly. It goes without saying that the planned sequel to Sahara did not come to fruition.
Thank God.
Between the box office performance and the passing, now that we know about it, there have been no further Dirk Pitt adventures on the big screen, and I doubt we're likely to get any.
The credit says a Clive Cussler dirt pick adventure.
Oh,
yeah. Like it's like a Breck Eisner film, a Clive Cussler dirt pick adventure. It's
like
ridiculous.
Like it's supposed to mean something to those of us watching it.
Like... But it might have meant something to some white people's grandpas.
Yeah,
who were buying these books in airports.
Clive's
like,
mom.
This guy, like you said, 80 novels. Somebody was buying them. Yeah.
No, a lot of people were buying them, and I'll bet if you handed me one right now, it would be engaging, if not fascinating. I'm sure it's, you know, an entertaining thing. It seems like, one, these stories don't translate all that well to begin with, and two, Clive himself made it very difficult for anyone trying to translate it, so...
Right.
I will say, you know, we're having fun. My score here is not... negative. It is okay.
Does that mean above 50 or above 0?
Right.
It is above 50.
Oh.
You know, I wish that I had been on like a kind of sleepy vacation, maybe a beach vacation, and it had rained one day, and you're like, oh, let's go to the movies, and you get there a little early, and like you hang out in the arcade. And then you see Sahara, and then you walk out, and a good restaurant is across the parking lot, so you don't even have to get in your car again. That's where I want Sahara. I want it right there.
So many variables.
I think that might have, I mean, minus the vacation and the beach, I think that might have literally been me with the old Dollar Theater and Bob Evans.
Yeah.
With no expectations and no real sink of commitment, you know, like the Dollar Theater, like We're Just Killing Time, whatever. Sure, it's a movie. There are a bunch of sequences that work. There are movie stars in it. It's funny on occasion. Sure. When held up to, like, why does nothing happen for an hour in the middle? And why? There's a missing civil warship in the desert. Why did we have to bring disease and solar power and all of this? No. Let's just look for the fucking ship. That's right. A good story.
Right. I was so confused. Like, why are these two stories being put together? Like, why do we need Eva and her plague and all that jazz? And then, like, the ship, finding the ship would have been enough. This is like National Treasure meets Fire Down Below is what this film is.
Yeah. Also, wait, so you said in your recap that the ship was poisoning them? It's not.
I thought that's what they said.
I thought that for like the first six times I watched this movie.
I thought somebody said that. I thought Dirk was saying that.
I'm pretty sure that it's just the pollution factory.
Got it. As if the pollution factory isn't enough.
Right? That scene where they open up the vault door and see all of the tanks. There's everything but the glowing green liquid.
Right.
I felt a little deprived. But yeah, just like the corroding tanks and then the slave labor.
Right. And I think I must have blinked or put my head down for a second because there's a split second between when they hop up on the train and like go into the train and then they're opening the vault to the thing. I was like, all this is on the train?
No, it is a very quick turnaround. Like the train goes directly to where the secret vault of pollution waste is.
Wait, what was the pollution waste from though?
No one knows. This,
somebody's just manufacturing pollution, just toxic waste, just because.
Why? Like the piece where they had stolen all the Tuareg villagers to work in their pollution factory has never made sense to me.
And did I get this right, that they were using the solar power mainly to destroy the waste? That was the point of
Correct.
The solar
effect? Correct. Wow. Also, when he's climbing those solar panels, all I could think about, I'm old enough that I've been down a metal slide.
Same.
Everyone knows that searing pain on the back of their thighs. When I say everyone, I mean everyone 35 and older.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I just feel like we could have done without the toxic waste story.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is always going to be horribly tainted by colonialism and racism, but if the Confederate warship was what was poisoning people in Africa,
right,
that might have been somewhat compelling.
Right? Yeah, that would have been like a nice little poetic nod to...
Right.
Yeah.
Can we tie a bow on the Civil War?
Right. I'd also like to point out that Glenn Thurman and Delroy Lindo, criminally underused.
I felt bad when I was editing last week's episode when I went very quickly from being like underused Angela Bassett to, oh yeah, Delroy Lindo is in this one. I was like, oh, I know, I messed up.
Oh yeah, those couple of minutes, you know, I was like, thanks for dropping. The movie was losing me. I'm glad you're here, but.
You're going already?
I love those couple of minutes. At some point, this episode is going to devolve into me being like, here's all the tropes that this movie does that I just like. And one of them, I mean, honestly, the whole thing is so much, and this maybe comes from there being 80 novels,
right,
is the like references to other adventures that we don't see.
Ah, yeah. The Panama.
I am a huge sucker for that. And they do that over and over and over again in this, from that credit sequence on, right?
Yeah.
And I assume that those headlines are they say Raise the Titanic in one of them. It's like, I assume they're describing other novels. But yeah, that scene where William H. Macy is like, help me out, Delroy Lindo. And he's like, not going to happen. And then he says a date.
Right.
And Delroy Lindo's like, I knew you'd bring that up.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like that kind of stuff too. And it's like, you know, it's not a bunch of, it's not excessively over-explained or anything. We don't even get any real explanation about it. It's just something between those two characters in that moment. They know what it means. And that's all that matters.
Right. We thought we were in Panama.
Yeah, my favorite Letterboxd lists this time, since you mentioned the green ooze, are Speedboat Chases! Exclamation point. That's a good list. And better, just one called Indiana Jones shit. Yeah. That's a genre, and this is in it.
Hey,
Dirk Pitt is Indiana Jones in the water.
Except he's barely in the water in this movie.
He's a like fucking naval star. Everything that's ever happened to me happened in the water, which I thought maybe was like trying to set up like this is a movie literally called Sahara, the biggest place on Earth known for its lack of water.
Right.
I thought that was setting up some kind of irony. Nope.
No. Hey, is Dirk supposed to, like, originally was Dirk supposed to be of Latin descent? Because McConaughey, he really has no reason to have such, like, his dyed hair. And I mean, I kind of understand why he's super tan, but I also feel like he's wearing eyeliner at some point. Like he's he's really trying to be Antonio Banderas.
I mean, who isn't? I doubt it. I don't know. Sean, do you have information there?
No, I can't imagine you would name anyone not of Waspy extraction.
Dirk
Pitt. Is Wasp a slur, or is it one of those where because of who we're slurring, it doesn't count?
Yes. Okay, first of all,
it stands for white
Anglo-Saxon
Protestant. Right. So it's just, I think it's a descriptor.
Yeah.
Okay. We watched a 50s sci-fi called The Wasp Woman, and my Twitter description was, or as we call her today, a Karen. And I was like, is that offensive?
I don't know. I think you'd only be offending Karen.
Right.
And who's going to admit to that?
What's the point? Again, I don't hate this movie. I think enough of it works. Oh, we should talk about the trailers. Camila, you've got a new segment.
Yes.
It's somewhere in the middle of the general discussion. We're going to drop in my Letterboxd lists and this segment.
Yeah, so I started to get into the habit of watching the trailers of the films that we are doing just out of curiosity, and also because I love a good movie trailer. I used to spend a lot of time doing it when I worked in an office setting, a lot of time wasted watching new upcoming videos. And then once, you know, I had a baby and pandemic happened, I realized I don't watch enough movie trailers anymore because I'm not chained to a desk. So I started watching it, and then I suggested that we do something with the movie trailers for this. And Robin had the brilliant idea to decide whether or not the movie is better or worse or about what we expected from the movie trailer. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I will edit in a small clip of the trailer just now.
Yes.
For explorer Dirk Pitt and his team,
this is the place. The ship should be here. The mystery that's buried with a long-forgotten legend carries a threat.
This thing could kill millions.
No one could have imagined.
Safina du Almout.
That sounds poetic. What's it mean?
The ship of death.
Great!
Now, every clue.
I'm looking for a boat.
Every secret.
Let's check it out.
Brings them closer to the greatest discovery under the sun.
Oh, my God.
Bring them to me.
From international best-selling author Clive Cussler, Matthew McConaughey.
I'll give you a door right now!
There's no way that should have worked.
Steve Zahn. Penelope Cruz. Sahara.
So, where do we land?
I'm going to hold because clearly I have the wrong perspective on this movie generally.
All right, I'll jump in. I'll go ahead. I think that the trailer makes the movie sound better than what it is. It's more comprehensive of how the two stories fit together because, like, they do a better explanation of, you know, like, why this with the poisoning and all that stuff and the water and the toxic waste and the ship and how those things come together, as opposed to, like, in the actual movie, I'm just like, the fuck is happening? Why are we talking about all of this? So I although it still wasn't enough to get me in the theater to see it, because I saw the trailer and I had never seen this movie up until last night.
The trailer made it look better than it is. The trailer had me cautiously optimistic. I felt like I was watching a, you know, fun 90s adventure movie that got lost and came out in 2005. And what I wanted from that was for it to be like a Sahara or a Congo or an Anaconda, which is fundamental. I said Sahara first. I meant Twister. Yeah. A Twister or a Congo or an Anaconda, where it's fundamentally a straight up adventure movie that could have happened at any time with one little theme. Like, this is just an adventure, but we're nodding towards science in some way. And what doesn't work for me is this is about colonialism. And the only moment I was mad at Robin was not for making us watch the movie. I was like, thanks for the pandemic movie with all the mask wearing, Robin.
Right.
Okay. But Colin was so upset when she's like, "Ooh, I'm investigating this new outbreak," and just walks into these people's homes zero PPE.
Right. And she, like, touches the body. Like, she has gloves on when she finds the dead body. But, I mean, you're not covering up your...
Right. She's like, "I'm just going to pry open your eyeball." Right. I also...
Were you here last month when they wore a spacesuit to check out E.T.'s house? That's how you do it. Anyway, go on.
Every now and then, this is a terrible habit of mine, but I sometimes click through on tweets about the coronavirus and see the unhinged replies to it.
Oh, I do the same thing.
And I recently saw a person with a not insignificant number of followers denying the germ theory of disease. And he was like, "Listen, all of these outbreaks," in air quotes, or actual quotes because it's Twitter, "can be traced to toxins." And I was like, "Oh, somebody watch Sahara."
A Sahara subtweet.
Anyway, that's two. The trailer is better than the movie, Robin.
I think that because I actually love this movie, it's so ridiculous. Think that the trailer is roughly as good as the movie. I do think it has the trailer problem of showing some of the best parts and kind of leaving the movie to not live up to it. So I guess I'm going to say better than, but on that cusp.
Gotcha. One of the things that I did enjoy about this movie is that the relationship between, Eva and Dirk, it never started off like volatile. It wasn't the whole, they hate each other and now they love each other. Well, like, you know, Romancing the Stone or the Mummy or something like that. So I do appreciate that.
No, they're really like, "Oh, we want to fuck, but we're going to wait till the right time."
Yeah, it's like, all right, yes. Like, I get it. Like, you both are hot as fuck. And, like, you guys know. Like, there's no reason. Like, Dirk is not intimidated by a brilliant scientist lady who works for the WHO.
So he's like, "I'm going to get in that as soon as there is a gap in my calendar."
Right.
One of the things I like is Steve Zahn. Zahn is great. Like, it's not even ironic anymore. He's just funny and entertaining and likable and watchable all the time. We had a little, when we were talking about it here, Mary Beth was like, I wonder why he doesn't, he is, it's just on TV. It's the thing that we all do where we're like, you know, White Lotus, which probably none of us have watched, but all of us have been told to watch. He's the star of White Lotus.
Oh, he's on that?
Yeah. He's the star of that.
What?
He's fine. What? Steve Zahn is fine. This was a good use of him, and I was happy to spend time with him. We've trampled enough. Robin, why do you love this movie?
Yeah.
I mean, I think so much of it is right place, right time for me. You know, this is one of those movies that just hit with me, and then, like, I remember buying it off the shelf at Target for, like, $6, and was going through it, and it just became a movie that I would slide into my DVD player whenever I was having a day when it was like, gotta stop thinking. Do you know what I mean? And my friend Regina Connolly and my co-host on Theronathon and Kiana Review, she feels the same way. So I think we have been a mutually reinforcing front of Sahara is good, actually. And I want to say that her take on Steve Zahn in this movie is that his mouth is like an envelope.
What does that mean?
I don't know. That's why I said it. I'm like, does that mean something to you?
I mean, does it like look like an envelope, or is it like full of secrets? Like
an envelope. Like an envelope.
Oh, okay.
Regina, I'm sorry for putting you on blast. Listeners, if you also think that his mouth is like an envelope, please reinforce Regina.
Now I'm like singing your mouth is an envelope, like to the tune of Your Body's a Wonderland.
But yeah, so it's Matthew McConaughey being very attractive and Penelope Cruz. And like I said, like they just hit a lot of tropes that will always entertain me. Steve Zahn disarming himself for a full 4 minutes.
that was amusing.
Which is in the trailer. And also just like their bickering and William H. Macy as the quiet, reserved badass, right? Old man badass, old man bureaucratic badass. Who doesn't love that?
I mean, it's a wonderful group of people and actors that come together in this. It's like, oh, great. Oh, Mom, that's awesome. Oh, William, hey, how you doing? But it's just, and I do enjoy the moments. I think the moment I found the funniest was when Zahn and Dirk are handcuffed in the back of that truck and they're trying to get out of it. And just like, I mean, just some comedic stuff like that. Like, it's slight. And there was a lot of stuff. And like, I think Matthew and Steven worked well together in this.
Yeah.
You know what? This is a slightly better version of. This is a slightly better version of The Deep. Remember The Deep?
Yes.
Our other shipwreck treasure movie, but this one has a subplot that we don't like, but The Deep had just nothing happening in for most of the movie,
right?
So sure, you punch that up and made an adventure, and yeah, it's a movie.
There's like a
also,
bunch of
I do
shit
wanna
always
say,
happening.
He's no Lou Gossett, because who is? But Lenny James, right, as evil warlord, is great.
Yes.
And I love that scene where he's like, I spent 27 pounds on this bullet. I'm about to kill you with it.
Yes, he is great. I also liked seeing him show up. You know, if I couldn't have more of Glenn and Delroy, I was happy to trade that off for Lenny.
I mean, we should have had more of all of them. We don't need... When we were watching it, I was like, oh, that guy from the Matrix sequels. What's his name? The Mandalorian? The Merovingian. I had to look it up. And I might be pronouncing that wrong because I have not seen those movies in 20 years. But we don't need him.
No.
Yeah. I guess they wanted to have a white bad guy, which, okay.
Like, sure. That's fine.
Sean, in the Faxi segment, you skipped over how Breck Eisner is somehow related to Michael Eisner, who was in charge of Disney at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is a classic little Hollywood nepotiz. And I also assume that he doesn't make movies anymore.
He is.
Ooh, his name.
He is my.
His name is Michael Breckinridge Eisner. Have you ever heard of a wealthier asshole?
Oh my god.
It's like... He would make a movie about Dirk Pitt. Yeah. He's Michael Eisner's son.
That name is exactly a trust fund. Like that. It's...
But you don't need to keep your membership card at the Equestrian Club if that's the name on your driver's license.
Right.
You just show them that.
They're like, oh yeah, yeah, come on in.
He has made 4 full movies. Thought Crimes was his kind of low budget thing. Sahara, the remake of The Crazies, which is not bad.
Okay.
It's not great, but it's not bad. And then the last
Timothy Oliphant
shot in Pittsburgh.
Oh.
The Crazies with Timothy Oliphant?
Yeah.
Love it. And of course it's not bad. Yeah. It's a national treasure. I'm joking. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it.
So that one worked out. I think since then he's been mostly, you know, existing with all of the money he has. The Expanse. He works on the TV series The Expanse.
Oh, I know people who like that show.
Sure.
I've heard of that show.
Let's rate it. Robin, go first.
What?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, I love this movie. It is obviously not good. So my gut check start was 75, but I am deducting 5 points for the throw like a girl.
Oh, geez.
Being the last line of the
right,
movie.
Right.
But then I'm adding back 1 point for Penelope Cruz wearing a bathing cap and looking hot doing it. So I'm landing on a 71.
Wait, we wanted to let you say the number first so you weren't compelled to
right.
change it when you hear numbers like this, Camila.
It's not a bad movie. It's just, I think I just have like some sort of block when it comes to certain subject matters. And also, like, desert movies or something. There's just some sort of block there. I just stop comprehending anything that's going on. Like, we're at in a desert. We've got, like, naval bases and civil war. But I landed on 52.
I had a number. I took 2 points away for the name Dirk Pitt. And then I took 1 further point away for saying we've got company in 2 consecutive sequences. You're allowed 1. 1 per film. And that landed on the same score as Camila, 52. We all are above average.
Yeah.
It's fine. 58 and a third. 58 and 1/3.
Fair.
I'm sure, with everything that has happened to Sahara, I'm sure they'd be pleased with 58.
Oh, yeah.
I think McConaughey would come and have a beer with us for that.
All right, all right, all right.
All right.
To be fair, he would have anyway. Didn't
need to bribe him with movie points.
But how stupidly sexy is it when he's just sipping tequila out of a shot glass in the back of a speedboat?
I think it's ridiculous. I just think it's like, maybe that's a real, like, I try to like purposefully not find this man attractive because I know I'm supposed to find him attractive, and I'm like, yeah. No, I don't want to get caught up in the McConaissance or whatever. But yeah, when he shows up half naked, I'm here for
right.
it.
Right, right. During one of the speedboat scenes, I was like, oh, this is what people who like Tenet were feeling during Tenet.
I still haven't seen that.
Their speedboat.
Will you at this point?
Probably not.
Will the day come when you're like, I want to be confused and a little irritated? For
I
2
did
and a half hours.
Probably not. I put it on one day and I was asleep in like 10 minutes.
And you need to be awake to be sure that you are correct in not
right.
understanding, which you are. It makes no sense.
Robin knows this because I texted her angrily when it happened. I went to a drive-in for something else. I forget what, you know, a retro thing. And then they came over and they were like, there aren't enough people on this screen. We're not running it. It's a thing. There has to be 5 cars. We could give you your money back. We're going to give you your money back either way. If you want to go over there to that screen, you're allowed. You're still getting your money back. So I was like, fine. That screen is showing Tenet. I've already seen it, but this time I'm going to get it. I'm going to understand. Let's do it. We're going to do it. And then the movie Unhinged with Russell Crowe started, which I had also already seen. and Tenet was being shown second, and I was like, well, no, I'm not waiting through this Russell Crowe movie to try Tenet again. Right. And in fact, that's it for Tenet. You're gone. I'm done. We're never revisiting it. Unless we land on it here, which could happen today. Oh, you never
bite
know.
Your tongue.
Yeah.
To the bingo card, my only questions are, was someone caught in a lie, or was there a surveillance video?
I don't think there was a surveillance video. And McConaughey was caught in a lie about not speaking English.
I'm also going to say I'm pretty sure that the Merovingian gets caught in a lie at some point.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We'll take it. I don't have anything else. Anybody?
Nope.
Nope. I think they all looked at all the explosions.
Yeah, they truly did.
Steve Zahn definitely did. And made a big, like, arm flinching, like, bleh, you know, like he does. So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I have so much to talk about.
Good, because full disclosure to our listeners, we are recording earlier than we normally do. So it's only been a few days since our last recording. So Sean, take it away.
I'm picking and choosing. Let's not get into a long thing about David Cronenberg's Crash. That's the movie from 1996 about people who get turned on by car crashes and then act on those desires extensively.
Yeah. Better or worse than Crash, the Best Picture winner.
Oh, that's tough.
That's the only question to answer about Crash.
It's tough because I spent 10 years on the record as the world's biggest Crash defender, where I had a long explanation for why no, it's actually good, that came in, that incorporated, you know, realism versus magic realism and, ways of approach, all of this shit. And then Paul Haggis got outed as an abuser, and I was like, why did I waste all that time? And now, what's her name who left Scientology, King of Queens?
Leah Remini.
Leah Remini says that the campaign against Paul Haggis was the Church of Scientology trying to discredit him because he also was leaving Scientology.
What?
All of which is to say, I don't know how I feel about the other Crash anymore.
Okay.
Crash by Cronenberg is good, and for almost no one. No one should really watch this. It is so fucking weird and gross and sexually aberrant that it is a brilliant, a semi-brilliant work of cinema that no one should really watch. I only bring it up to say, man, Whiplash, one of the main characters and the weirdest character is played by Elias Koteas, who you will remember as Casey Jones in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it is really weird to watch both of those in the space of 1 week. But late in the movie, he has sex with James Spader. So it's got that going for it. And I know that's relevant to Robin's interest.
I was just going to say, I'm like, oh, I hate how much that's exciting for me.
Yeah, we also, speaking of Spader, we also watched Pretty in Pink and Crash on consecutive nights, which is also a big turnaround, but a lot of sexy James Spader.
Full spectrum of Spaderosity.
Oh. Yeah. Candyman is great. I mean, if you're going to go to the theater, do it to watch Candyman. It's so good to see a horror sequel, one of these latter-day horror sequels that very intelligently ties into the original movie while also expanding the themes of the original movie and is just really well made. Naya DaCosta is the star of the show. I know that everyone is talking about Yahya Abdul-Mateen. Did I say all three of his names?
Yahya.
Also, I have been thinking, ever since he became famous, I have been thinking about Matthew McConaughey when he comes up with the tomb and says, King Mateen! And that's with a B, but in my brain it was with an M.
Right.
Anyway, just a little bow on that.
He is great too, but like the announcement here is that Naya DaCosta is an amazing director.
It's Naya, not Nia?
Yeah, I thought it was Nia, assumed. Not because I heard it anywhere. Pronounced.
No, just because that's a more common name. Yeah. Like my coworker is named Nia. That's why I think that. Right.
It's probably Nia. There's a
regardless. Name first black woman to direct a number one movie in America.
Yes.
Which I can't believe it's taken this long, but also go her.
Go Nia.
Yep. It is on the list now. Maybe we'll draw it, and my co-host will have to decide whether or not they're going to a movie theater. I really liked it. It is very scary. It is heavy subject matter, but I loved it, and recommended it. I also loved it.
I thought it was a remake or a reboot, whatever.
That's something that they keep calling it, like the spirit of, or like an ancestor. Like nobody's actually, I don't think I've heard the actual sequel word thrown around, but like everyone keeps like giving it some pretty thing that's like, it's not a reboot, it's not, but it's in the same vein, and yeah, I don't know.
it would be spoilery to explain why it is okay. A straight sequel. Okay. I've never seen any of the other Candyman sequels, so I don't know if this is like the new Halloween where it's just a sequel to the original, but it's definitely at least that.
I don't think I even knew there were.
I know there was Candyman at least two. I don't know if there were any more. I think the rest of them are like straight to video.
I also loved The Green Knight. I'm sure everyone assumed I would. So
how scary is it? Like, can I watch it?
Yeah, it's not scary.
Okay. It seems scary.
No, it's more weird than scary. It's okay. More, you know, uncanny than scary. Dev Patel is great. There's a thing going around Letterboxd that is like, this is the best hero ever. He fails at everything. He screws up. He doesn't care. He spends most of the movie wandering around confused. Very relatable. And that's true. This is such a good antidote for every hero movie, because he's just like, duh, what do I do? And it goes bad for him at every stage. I know a lot of people like to say, ugh, A24, everything's these showy, saturated Instagram visuals. It's like,
yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting to look at. Go watch War for the Planet of the Apes if you want everything to be boring and serious and sad. Give me something that's cool for my eyes. Yeah, I loved The Green Knight. Loved Candyman. Don't watch Crash, but yeah, it's been a good movie week.
Camila.
Okay, I watched the Bob Ross documentary.
Oh, how is it?
It's nice. It's...
I mean, it's of just, course it is.
I know, right? It's like, I mean, he was such a pure soul, and you know, and this world didn't deserve him, basically. I mean, everything you thought about Bob Ross is just, you're gonna walk away being like, yep, that's exactly what I figured. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you find out some people were shitty and stole his likeness, basically, and cheated his family out of money. So there's that. So, and again, it just reinforces, damn it, Bob was too pure for this world. And then I also watched, I guess Netflix has a new series called The Untold, and they're telling like all these crazy stories from athletes or something, or like from the sports worlds. And the episode that I watched was called Malice from the Palace, and I guess it was about a fucking brawl that happened between the Indiana Pacers and fans.
What?
Yeah, that was some wild shit. Fairly recently.
Yeah,
that's since 2000.
Yeah, yeah. I forget what it was, but I mean, I don't know anything about, I don't care about basketball. I didn't care about, you know, this, I hadn't even heard about this fight that happened, but I was like, when I saw the trailer for it, I was like, I must watch this and find out what it's about. And I mean, it's great. Like, I said, if you don't care anything about basketball, it's still very interesting. It's like an hour, and you just watch, and they tell it, and they talk to everybody who was involved, and you just find out, like, basically just like how it went down and how wrong everybody was and who got blamed and who got punished. And it was just kind of fucked up. And I think they have some other stories that are happening. Like, I think there's a Caitlyn Jenner episode, and there's something about some punk ass whose daddy bought him a hockey team, and so I might
Brett Eisner style.
Right, yeah, so I might stick with this for a while, find out what it's about, what's going on here in the sports worlds. And I know it's not a movie, but I just started watching this limited series on Netflix called Clickbait, and it is amazing. No, it's really good.
Where it's like at 500 million views,
yes.
I die.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say anything more about it because there's a lot of twists and turns and stuff. And I also haven't finished it. I'm like two more episodes to go, but it's really good. It's a lot better than what I anticipated.
Robin, I know you said that you haven't had a whole week, but anything?
Okay. So my recommendation is not a movie, is not a TV show, but a board game.
Oh.
Ooh.
Tell me more.
Blockbuster board game. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes.
They sell it at Target. It comes in what looks like an old Blockbuster plastic VHS case. Is awesome. It was a gift from my friend Liz Labaz for my birthday almost 6 months ago. And it is, if you've ever played the game Celebrity.
Yeah.
Right? Have you ever heard of Australian Rules Celebrity?
No.
Australian Rules Celebrity is where you don't have the benefit of the first round for the things in the bowl, right? So you like in the first round of Celebrity, you can use anything that's not on the card, right? Uh-huh. You can be like, he is the guy who says, all right, all right, all right. And then it's like, oh, Matthew McConaughey, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second round, you only get one word. So you have to, you can't even say all right, and depending on how you spell it, right? So you'd be like, right, right? So it is that, like, you have, like, the different rules are, like, you have to say a movie with one word or a quote, or you have to mime the movie.
Oh.
And it's outrageously fun. Like, I cannot recommend it enough for something that I, like, very clearly seemed like something that they sold their IP to some, you know, random upstart game company to offset their bankruptcy. And it's just super fun.
That sounds like I would enjoy that.
There's also, like, I only played it with Colin. It actually says on the box you need four players because there's, like, a strategy element where you, like, set up or sabotage the other team,
mm-hmm.
Which comes from, like, a face-off round where you flip a card and it'll say, like, movies with a dog. And then you have to, like, back and forth name movies with a dog until someone gets stumped for 15 seconds.
Ah.
Yeah.
I've played it. It's great.
Right?
The posthumous Blockbuster branding, I panned the camera down because I'm wearing a Make It a Blockbuster Night t-shirt right now. They're much better at monetizing their nostalgia than they were at monetizing their existence.
Right.
I wore this shirt at a dinner and there was a six-year-old there. And so I explained what Blockbuster Video was and she had a lot of questions. None of this made sense.
All right, so movies used to come on something physical, yes?
Yeah, you had to go to a special place just to find a movie that you would watch later at your house.
And then you had to take it
Speaking of not doing that, let's draw a movie. Plenty coming up this week is just a normal draw with no vetoes?
Does anybody have one?
I don't have one.
We got to sell that. The most dangerous draw of all.
Scary.
The draw they can do nothing about other than just say no. Will you say no to maybe an Oscar winner, if not an Oscar nominee, and a Golden Globe winner in exactly the wrong category? Hey, Robin, how much do you like sad space movies? Because we're watching The Martian.
Huh.
That's a happy space movie.
Is it?
That is a happy space movie. There's
poop
jokes.
It won Golden Globes for comedy, so you know.
There's poop jokes.
What? Is this the same one with old dude?
There's just
with,
one poop joke.
With Matt Damon?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Hey, there's nothing we can do about it.
No.
No, I liked this movie, I think. In fact, the reason why it's faded into my mind a little bit is probably because it wasn't sad enough. I like my space movies to be devastating.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you can rent it.
Two and a half hours?
They gotta go to space!
Is it real time that they're going to space? Like, damn.
Time works differently on Mars.
Oy vey.
I'm neither excited nor angry about it. It's like, The Martian. Why not?
Fucking Matt Damon.
That's his name.
That fucking guy.
You know, you got 2 weeks. Do it in shifts.
Yeah.
I took a break in the middle of Sahara. Like, it wasn't that boring. I was just a little sleepy, so I took a nap, and then I woke up and finished on my phone, which I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Voodoo kept trying to tell me I didn't want to watch it. Like, I got like an hour in, and then it just shut off. The whole thing just shut down completely. Voodoo just like shut down the whole everything, and I'm like, the fuck. And then I had to go back.
Not 100% sure that it still existed as a service.
And that happened to me twice. Like I finally get back into it like maybe 20 minutes later, and I did doze off for like probably 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. And I had like a good 45 left of the movie, and I wake up and regular TV is on. So I mean, like, again, Voodoo was just like, shut it all down. Just shut it down.
It's Voodoo's new, we know you're not having a great time feature. You know, all your devices can tell where you're looking. Right. They've seen that you're on the phone, you're on the, you know. Would that be useful or not? Like, with the TV calling you out, like, listen, you're not watching this baseball game. You haven't looked up for your phone for 45 minutes. We're just going to turn off now.
That's the entire point of baseball.
Before we travel from the desert to a desert on another planet, Sahara was released April 8th, 2005. What was the number one song in America?
Mariah Carey.
No.
Justin Timberlake.
Incorrect.
Black Eyed Peas.
No.
This is a dark spot. This is when I was in college and like, listening to Neutral Milk Hotel, and like I do not know what was happening in pop music at this time. This is gonna be rough.
That Bad Day. Ooh. That Bad Day, dude.
I was just gonna say, is it related to American Idol in any way?
No, this is certainly a big star. Mm. You could say it's the song, one of the songs that made him a big star. He's less known for his music now as just being a famous person.
Just being a famous person?
No, but now we're getting in the right area code.
50 Cent?
Correct.
Is it in the, what was it, in the club? Is that a thing? Was that?
No, the other
candy
the
shop.
Other big
candy
one.
Shop?
Candy Shop?
Correct. Nice. It's Candy Shop by 50 Cent featuring Olivia. Turns out there's a featuring on that song, and it's a lady named Olivia.
Who's
Wonder
Olivia?
What she's up to.
Who's Olivia? Well, how you doing, Liv? What's
Who are you?
What is she?
She
even
barely
do? Does she do
does,
anything other than like moan?
He sings the hook, and then she just does again once, but mostly him.
Does he? I don't think is she involved really other than like I feel like there might just be a couple lady moans in the background or something. That got you a featuring?
She is not one of the results when I search Olivia. Like, do you mean Olivia Rodrigo, Newton John, De Havilland, Munn, or Wilde? Nope, none of those.
Olivia from The Cosby Show. Is that who you meant? Oh, whose actual name is Raymond Simone. Olivia Benson from SV.
Number one.